The worker Q explained for the new programmer. Visual programming, like any kind of programming, can get pretty complicated. If we were to base visual programming on standard programming concepts like loops and ifs, we would quickly defeat the point of visual programming, which is easy to comprehend programs. Low-level constructs are useful to get things started, maybe, but far too primitive to use in creation of large visual programs. Furthermore, there's a bit of a problem, because computers have multiple CPUs or CPU cores. So from the get-go, we have to write programs with parts that may run at the same time. How in the world can you manage such a feat? Not only tracing the flow of your program as you design it, but 8 or 32 flows of your program at the same time. And when do you know when all the multiple overlapping flows completed even? Yikes. In comes the worker queue. It is a database of things that need to get done. Instead of loading a list of blog articles that need processing and then pushing them down a single pipeline, where it is likely only a single CPU core would process it and you have to keep track of a no more data signal along with the too much data or the slow down signal, you load your blog articles and push them onto a worker queue. In visual programming, that would mean you connect your JSON feed, where your blog articles are, to a worker queue box. Pretty much a single swipe of a mouse. The worker queue has a single output that spits out all the data once it all has been processed. That is the done signal. You get another feed coming out of it, this time the list of all the transformed articles. And the worker queue has a marvelous input socket marked worker, where you put your program in. Conceptually, your blog article processor function becomes a worker once you plug it into a worker queue. So you have a JSON feed box that has a URL pointing to your JSON file, a worker function chain of boxes that do something interesting with your article, plugged into the worker queue that has an output port that will spit out a list of all the processed articles as a new feed. You can configure the number of workers to match your CPU core count, or set it to any number, including 1. If you are going to process 1 article at a time, don't wait for the whole list. Tap into the job done output socket. If you can afford to initially process your blog articles with 32 workers or more, crunching data at the same time, go for it. But then, you may need to start to worry about memory as things get more complex. In that case, you send the list to another queue that this time processes 1 item at a time. And you're back to the standard world of processing 1 thing after another. You are not limited to the CPU cores of a single computer. Imagine you have 128 articles in your blog and you want to clean them all up. If you have a Raspberry Pi cluster of, say, 32 computers totaling 128 cores, you can theoretically have a worker on each of those, distributing your worker queue processing to theoretically run 128 times faster. Go from 2 minute wait time, if your program ran on a single thread, to 2 second wait time, which is a pretty big deal. There would be bottlenecks, of course, but you could deal with those. At the moment, the theory here matters the most, because you can also cross the local network boundary and request 128 now powerful servers, which will get booted up just for a moment and won't break the bank. This kind of dynamic worker network expansion is called self-provisioning or automatic scaling. If you want to let your users to convert their blogs to video, for example, you would want a self-provisioning network, as it could theoretically scale to meet all possible demand, and since you know ahead of time how much it would cost to run the remote workers, you just include that in what the user pays, so you don't worry about the cost at all, and it wouldn't be too expensive even. There's one more interesting use of a queue, and I must mention it here as it is just too enchanting. If, for example, you needed 128 cooking recipes with some strained but interesting background stories, you could put that in a queue and create a worker that posts a bounty somewhere. And a lady comes in, shares her recipe, gets paid, and your worker marks that job as solved. So here, the CPU is replaced with a human being. Later, you can send the job to another queue that now verifies quality, perhaps even with the use of AI this time. These functions that comprise a worker do present a challenge to the novice programmer. But this is a solved problem, and Apple Automator is a neat example of that. It is just a comprehensive library of easy-to-understand actions with some options that you configure. Automator is a visual programming language. Here, the designers chose to only allow for two ports, input and output. And rather than lines connecting everything, the UI designers created the idea of blocks that simply go on top of each other. For the sake of completion, the application framework that wraps these feeds, queues, and workers or automations is event-based. I once called event-based programming thought programming. So you just emit events such as load initial JSON feed, program complete, save the result. And then you set up listeners that hear those events and respond with more actions, such as load from URL or save to disk. So visual programming done right does not bother you with ifs and loops. It brings out the elite, the exclusive, the luxury patterns that guide your hand. It is of some note that the more luxurious the pattern, the uglier it is in standard non-visual code. It is just hard to track everything, as there are no shortcuts here, and you are operating a virtual machine. But once you move up to the higher generation of a programming language, then it is just a couple of boxes, and the hard-to-imagine machine becomes visualized.